voice which calls to me and speaks my name.
That was Sarah Brightman and Antonio Banderas, actor, dancer, singer, an all-round person. That was beautiful music. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and the time now is just after 7 p.m., and it's time for another episode of Health and the Awakening of the Self. Where we deal with health by giving out specific information about how to improve and preserve your health. And we deal with the awakening of the self through information and exercises and techniques that awaken yourself. These are called self-inquiry, a method of self-inquiry, or they're the teachings of non-duality. And they come out of Vedanta, from the East, and goes right back to Shankaracharya and way, way before that. Even the Buddhists have a similar kind of teaching. My name is Dr. Mike. I'm an MD and a naturopath, and I'm a teacher of meditation for a good number of years. Please feel free to call into this show at any time if you have any questions or you want to discuss anything specific. The number is 831-427-3772, and the email is frsc@freakradio.org, although I don't check the email that much. But the number again is 831-427-3772. And if you have a spiritual teacher you want to hear on this show, please let me know and we'll see about putting him on. As always, our slogan is, may the heart, may the mind melt into the heart. May the mind fall into the heart. May the mind be absorbed in the heart, or the state of beingness, or the state of presence, the aware presence. And also, again, you're not going to enjoy the freedom of realizing who you are, or the freedom of the truth, if just by listening, reading a book, or listening to this program. You've got to do the exercises given out here, and also the guided meditation. They're the two most important parts of the program, are the guided meditation and the exercise, the spiritual exercises we give out. Hopefully we'll have one for you tonight. I'm not quite sure. I can't remember. But anyway, we'll go ahead on that grounds. And just queuing up a program for you here. The first program tonight is going to be Eckhart Tolle, T-O-L-L-E. He's the man who wrote several books. The most famous is The Power of Now. And he's going to talk about the name of the thing is Plan Your Future in the Present. It's really, it explains very well what love is. And, of course, we all know that the world in general, and the universe, of course, too, will function a lot better with more love. So this is a very good definition, a very good understanding of what love is. So listen carefully. This will help you to understand. I've got to skip some ads here. Sorry. Okay, it should be coming out now.
If most humans, or even half of the population, lived in that new state of consciousness.
This person asks, after many years of meditation and all the twists and turns of life, I'm now in the grave.
It is inconceivable to the mind to imagine what this world would look like if most humans, or even half of the population, lived in that new state of consciousness. Completely inconceivable. We cannot even conceive of what our human-made world would look like in the structures that we have created. Of course, they wouldn't persist in this form. The business world, or the political, and all that. So if you left the planet for a while and came back in 1,000 years, and humans, and then you revisit this planet, and humans live in the new state of consciousness, I'm sure it would look as if you're visiting a strange planet, an alien planet, and yet a very beautiful place. It would look like some heavenly realm. Incredible beauty, harmony. Forms will still come and go, but it no longer matters. But if you returned to that planet with the old consciousness and visited that place then that is an embodiment or an expression of the new consciousness, it would seem unbearable. If you go into heaven with the old consciousness, it will look like hell. I can't stand this. For a start, there would be no entertainment anymore in the way we know it. Nothing much to watch on TV, because those things wouldn't be needed anymore. You get bored out of your mind, and after a little while, it was, get me out of here, if you were coming with the old mind to that place. This could also happen while you're sitting here. You are connected with the energy field of the body. Hold that straight. You may occasionally find the mind wanting to come in. It'll push. It'll try. It'll try a few thoughts. It'll hope that one thought is going to draw your attention in completely. The mind says, okay, let's try this thought. Let's remind him or her about this problem that's going to be there next week, and see if that can draw attention in completely. So as little thought comes up about, and that can quickly draw all your attention, it draws it out of the body, attention leaves the body, and it's back in, completely flows into that thought, which then becomes a thought stream. It leads, one thing leads to another, it proliferates, and one small thought develops suddenly into a vast current of mind. And you're suddenly in, oh, my problems, I shouldn't be sitting here, there's so many things I haven't dealt with yet, why have I come here? So this may happen, and the moment you become aware of it, it'll be easier here to be aware of it when it happens, because there's so much presence. And then you say, wow, I've been completely lost for 10 minutes, you can suddenly see, and simply put, go back into, re-enter the body, be there. So now you're becoming familiar with that state. Also energetically, there will be an increase sitting here for several hours, which ultimately is not several hours, it's only really one timeless moment. That will increase the intensity of that state of consciousness, state of presence. And so you practice, don't confine your practice to moments of quiet practice. Bring it into simple situations at first. The state of stillness or presence, meeting someone, saying hello, and looking at that person for a few moments. In the simple, if you can feel the body, and look, no judgment, just, who is looking then? Is it you, the little person, or is there something greater than you looking through your eyes? Greater than you, and yet you. There's an energy consciousness itself is looking. No longer the limited conditioned consciousness as the person. When the mind is still and you perceive the other person, who is perceiving? One could say there's nobody anymore, not a person as such who is perceiving, because there's no judgment and labeling. There's an energy. And so gradually you know yourself as that, not as the person, as the consciousness itself. And the consciousness itself looks. And when you look at the world as consciousness, you see incredible beauty everywhere. And you see, oh, wherever you look, there's a strange sense of I'm looking at myself. Not, you don't have to formulate these words, but there's a strange sense of everything is basically you, because you consciousness, everything is consciousness, an expression of consciousness in some form. Every human, every plant, every flower, every planet, every sun is an expression. Consciousness become something temporarily. So when you look from a place that is deeper than your form, consciousness looks and sees itself in some other form. It's a beautiful sense of wherever I look, wherever I go, I encounter myself in some other form. And I look at this flower, and there's a deep sense of that is really, that's, I am that. The essence of who I am, and I'm speaking as you, the essence of who I am is expressed in millions and billions of life forms everywhere. And in that beauty in this form, of course, is not going to last for very long, because the flower, in a few days, it'll wilt. And yet, that beauty is inseparable from consciousness. It is simply an external expression of something that is inherent, unmanifested, continuously in consciousness, not time-bound. So, in the state of presence or non-labeling, knowing other life forms as yourself is what is actually that is the deepest meaning of love. And that's the only true meaning of love, is to know the other as yourself.
Okay, there's the true meaning of love is to be able to perceive at a very subtle level your intimacy with all life, not just humans, but animals, etc. In order to make that connection, you have to open up your deeper consciousness. Right now, in a lot of people, that consciousness is blocked through stress and negativity. It's closed off. We close it off at an early part of our life when we start getting emotionally hurt by people around us, and we tend to put a block up, a wall around our heart. So we have to dissolve. That's what the exercises that we give out here do. They dissolve that wall so you can actually feel again. You can be again who you really are, be the divine self that you are. All right, so now we'll go over now to some music, and we're going to play we're going to play Andrea Bocelli and Sarah Brightman, Time to Say Goodbye, one of the more beautiful songs that I've ever heard. That's some ads I gotta get rid of. Step over. All right, should be coming now. Again, Andrea Bocelli and Sarah Brightman. Time to Say Goodbye.
Sogno all'orizzonte manca le parole, e io sì lo so che sei con me, con me. Tu mia luna, tu sei qui con me. Mio sole, tu sei qui con me. Oh.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that song as much as I did. One of the more beautiful songs that that are around at the moment. Just reflecting back on Eckhart Tolle's talk, it's interesting. The mind intrudes. It's almost like the mind wants all your attention, so it'll stick in the most obtrusive thought that it can. But it's our job, through the techniques that we give out here and through spiritual techniques, to keep the attention as much as possible. Not all the time, of course, but at periods of time, to keep the attention as much as we can in the area of beingness, the presence or the I am. This is not something we have to look for and search for. We already have this. We are this in our essence. And we just have to focus in on this area. Sometimes we can do this actually by what we call going into the sleeping bag and zipping yourself in for a while. And what that means is if you get some time, maybe you don't have to get up so early in the morning, maybe you got a free morning Saturday or something, or maybe you wake up early, is once your body is comfortable and warm, you can, as it were, zip yourself in with a warm hat or something. And once you're in that comfortable state, you can abide in the state, in the feeling of beingness as much as you can. Now, the mind will intrude a little bit. You can expect that. But the main thing is not to fight with the mind. That just gives it more energy. So if thoughts come in, let them come in. We're not waiting for them to go away. We're concerned with focusing our attention in the state of beingness or the I am-ness. You don't have to repeat the word I am or beingness, but you can just focus into that state. It's a state of more quietness, more stillness, and that's a good exercise to do whenever you get the chance to do that. All right, now, next, you'll remember yesterday I played for you a talk called, let's see now, what happened to the talk? The talk was, Does Consciousness Need a Brain? But somehow, oh yeah, oh yeah, I have it here actually. Okay, and we're just going to carry on. It's a very interesting talk. You know, just to give you a little preamble into it, is most scientists today think that consciousness is generated by electrical, chemical interactions in the brain. And this man is saying that, no, consciousness can exist without a brain, without a physical matter. It's something more fundamental than physical matter, and it's not generated by physical matter. That's what this man is saying. So he is a professor at one of the colleges in the southern parts of the States. I forgot. I think, does it say? I did know, and now I've forgotten. Anyway, he's very well known. He's written many books and stuff. And his... I'll get you his name later in the program.
These cases. The average age at the time of the near-death experience was 31 years. But there is a very wide range. One young girl reported an experience she had had when she was 8 months old and undergoing kidney surgery. The oldest near-death experiencer I have studied was 81 at the time of his heart attack. About one-third of these near-death experiences occur during surgical operations, one-quarter during serious illness, and one quarter happened during life-threatening accidents. The common features of near-death experiences can be categorized as changes in thinking, changes in emotional state, paranormal features and otherworldly features. Changes in thinking during the near-death experience include a sense of time being altered. Often people report that time stopped or ceased to exist during the experience. It also includes a sense of revelation or sudden understanding, in which everything in the universe suddenly becomes crystal clear. There is a sense of the person's thoughts going much faster than usual and being much clearer than usual. And finally, there is a life review or panoramic memory in which the person's entire life seems to flash before them. Typical emotions reported during the near-death experience include an overwhelming sense of peace and well-being, a sense of cosmic unity or being one with everything, a feeling of complete joy, and a sense of being loved unconditionally. The paranormal features often reported in near-death experiences include a sense of leaving the physical body, sometimes called an out-of-body experience, an experience of a person's physical senses, such as vision and hearing, becoming more vivid than ever before. Sometimes people report seeing colors and hearing sounds that do not exist in this life, and a sense of extrasensory perception, knowing things beyond the range of the physical senses, such as things that are happening at a remote location. And finally, visions of the future. Finally, many people report that in their near-death experiences, they entered some other unearthly world or realm of existence. Many report that they came to a border they could not cross, or a point of no return, that if they had crossed, they would not be allowed to return to life. Many report encountering some kind of mystical or divine being. And some report seeing deceased spirits, often loved ones who had died previously, who seemed to be welcoming them into another realm, or in some cases, sending them back to life. One of the things about near-death experiences that interests me most as a psychiatrist is the profound after-effects. People reliably report a consistent pattern of changes in attitudes, beliefs, and values that do not seem to fade over time. Near-death experiencers report overwhelmingly that they are more spiritual after the experience, that they have more compassion for others and a greater desire to help others, a greater appreciation for life and a stronger sense of meaning or purpose in life. An overwhelming majority of near-death experiencers report that they have a stronger belief that we survive death of the body. And just as many report that they have no longer any fear of death. About half report that they have completely lost interest in material possessions. And many report that they no longer have any interest in personal prestige or in status or in competition. Now, some of you may be thinking that these people are now following the Buddha. They show more compassion, they tend to try to help others, they're less attached to material possessions and status. But as His Holiness pointed out yesterday, these values are not uniquely Buddhist. These are universal values. Almost all spiritual traditions teach compassion and the transience of worldly rewards. near-death experiencers are not simply becoming more Buddhist, they are becoming more spiritual. I want to highlight three particular features of near-death experiences that particularly suggest that consciousness is not produced by the brain. These three features of near-death experiences are, first, clear thinking, perception, and memory while the brain is incapacitated. Second, accurate perceptions from a visual perspective outside the physical body. And third, encounters with deceased persons who convey accurate information that no one else could have known, including, in some cases, encounters with deceased persons who were not known at the time to have died or were not known by the experiencer at all. Perhaps the most important of these features, simply because it is the most common, is the first. Among several hundred near-death experiencers that I have studied, 47% report that their thinking during the experience is clearer than it is in their normal waking state. In addition, 38% record their thinking as faster than usual. 29% describe their thinking as more logical than usual. And 17% say they have more control over their thoughts than they usually do. Furthermore, an analysis of their medical records shows that mental functioning is significantly better in those people who come closest to death. Moreover, many experiencers report that during their near-death experience, they had a panoramic life review, not just single brief images that can be evoked by electrical stimulation of the brain, but elaborate events, sometimes from the entirety of their persons of that person's life. Let me give you an example of clear thinking during a near-death experience. A 25-year-old nurse had become deeply depressed and decided to end his life by taking a suicidal overdose. He took some medication from the hospital where he worked. After taking the overdose, he lay down on his bed expecting to die. Instead, he became quite ill with nausea and painful stomach cramps. He then decided to telephone for help. So he got up out of his bed and tried to walk to the telephone. However, by now he was quite sedated and confused from the overdose, and he had great difficulty standing and walking. In addition, he was having hallucinations of many small people in his apartment who were stopping him from getting to the telephone. In that confused state, he suddenly felt himself leave his physical body, and he found himself standing 10 feet behind his body and above it. From that new visual perspective, he watched his body sway unsteadily, and he could see his body looking around in confusion at the imaginary people. He remembered having seen the hallucinations when he was in his body, and he could see his body still appearing confused. But he himself, from that position 10 feet behind the body, was thinking very clearly and could not see the hallucinated little people. So his center of consciousness had left his body and was thinking very clearly, while his brain was still hallucinating and confused. Another important feature that challenges the materialistic model of consciousness and the brain is being out of the body and accurately perceiving things that one could not see normally. Among several hundred near-death experiences I have studied, 48% report out-of-body experiences. In 1982, the American cardiologist Michael Sabam published a study in which he asked near-death experiencers who had reported leaving their bodies during cardiopulmonary resuscitation to describe in detail what they had seen. He also asked a matched group of seasoned cardiac patients to imagine watching their resuscitations and to try to describe it from a third-person perspective. 80% of the matched group who did not have near-death experiences made major errors in their descriptions. None of the near-death experiencers made any errors, and 19% of them described specific idiosyncratic and unexpected events that happened during their resuscitation. A few years ago, the Welsh intensive care nurse Penny Sartori published a 5-year study in which she replicated these same findings. She found that all the near-death experiencers who claimed to have left their bodies described accurate resuscitations scenarios, whereas all of the cardiac arrest survivors who did not have near-death experiencers gave incorrect descriptions of the equipment and the procedures. The American psychologist Kenneth Ring reported a study of 31 blind near-death experiencers, many of them blind from birth, who were able to describe the scene around them while they were out of their bodies, in some cases even including accurate descriptions of the colors of some objects. In a recent review of 93 published reports of potentially verifiable out-of-body experiences during the near-death experience, the American psychologist Jan Holden found that 92% were completely accurate. 6% contained some minor error, and only 1% was wrong. Even in cases in which the out-of-body perceptions were reported to an independent witness before they were verified, the numbers were greater than 90% accurate. If you asked all of us what we saw here yesterday, I don't think we could be more than 90% accurate. Let me give you an example of an accurate out-of-body perception. A 56-year-old van driver had an acute heart arrhythmia due to blockage of his coronary artery, and he underwent emergency coronary bypass operation. During the procedure, while he was fully anesthetized, he left his body and was able to look down and see his body on the operating table. To his surprise, he also saw the surgeon standing by the operating table, appearing to flap his wings as if he were trying to fly. That's not something that you would have expected a surgeon to be doing. The day after the operation, he asked the surgeon why he had been flapping his arms during the procedure. The surgeon seemed very embarrassed, and he angrily asked the patient who had told him about that. The patient responded that no one had told him, that he had seen it himself from above during the operation. When he eventually got over his embarrassment, the surgeon explained that he was watching his assistants perform the operation and that he was supervising them. In order to ensure that his hands, which were in sterilized gloves, did not touch anything that was contaminated, he put them somewhere he knew they wouldn't touch anything, flat against his chest, and he instructed his assistants in the operation by motioning with his elbows of where to cut, looking like he was trying to fly. Finally, among several hundred near-death experiences I have studied, 42% reported meeting recognizable deceased acquaintances in their near-death experiences. These encounters were more likely to be reported the closer the person has come to death. In 33% of these cases, the person was not someone that the experiencer wanted to see or expected to see, but was instead someone else, someone they didn't necessarily want to see. That would be surprising if these visions were hallucinations that were caused by someone's expectations and wishful thinking. Most impressively, some of these deceased persons seen during the near-death experience were people who were not known to be dead at the time. Let me give you an example. An American pediatrician, Dr. K.M. Dale, treated a 9-year-old boy with meningitis who hovered near death for 36 hours before his fever finally broke. During those 36 hours, he was surrounded by his anxious parents, who never left his hospital bed during that vigil. When his fever finally broke, as soon as he opened his eyes, the boy described having gone to heaven, where he saw several of his deceased relatives. And then he added that he had also seen his sister Teresa, who told him that he had to go back to his body. Now, the boy's father got very upset when he heard this, because his daughter was at college 1,500 kilometers away in another state and was perfectly healthy. But the boy insisted that Teresa had sent him back and told him that she had to stay there. His father then left the hospital, promising his wife that he would call their daughter as soon as he got home. But when he tried to telephone Teresa, he learned that the college officials had been trying unsuccessfully all night to reach the family to tell them the tragic news that Teresa had in fact been killed around midnight in an automobile accident. Even more impressively, sometimes the deceased person seen in the near-death experience was someone the experiencer had not known even existed. The Swiss-American physician Elizabeth Kubler-Ross published the account of a girl who had a near-death experience during heart surgery and later said she had met her brother, although as far as she knew, she never had a brother. Her father, moved by this vivid account, acknowledged that her parents had, in fact, had a son who had died before she had been born, and they never mentioned him to her.
Okay, I think we're going to stop at this point, but next Monday we'll continue the end of that talk. So that's pretty interesting. I'm familiar with all these these kind of cases. I used to attend a near-death experience group that used to meet once a month in another city that I lived in. So these experiences are very, very real to me. I'm sure you found those interesting as I did. Now we'll continue with some more music, and this time it's going to be from Andrea Bocelli, and it's Bésame Mucho.
Mucho, como si fuera esta noche la última vez. Bésame, bésame mucho, que tengo miedo a perderte, perderte después. Quiero tenerte muy cerca, mirarme en tus ojos, verte junto a mí. Pienso que tal vez mañana yo ya estaré lejos, muy lejos de ti. Bésame, bésame mucho, como si fuera esta noche la última vez. Bésame, bésame mucho, que tengo miedo a perderte, perderte después. Bésame, bésame mucho, tengo miedo a perderte, perderte después. Que tengo miedo a perderte, perderte
Consuelo Velasquez. Of course.
Okay, so that was Andre Bocelli singing Bésame Mucho. Nice song. Okay, we come to the last program of the evening, and this one is going to be... it's the first part of a guided meditation. It's about 8 or 9 minutes long. So if you could find a comfortable position, either sitting in a chair or lying down if you need to, or whichever position is most comfortable for you, and you might find it better to close your eyes and listen to the guided meditation by Master Muji. It was going, but no sound was coming out, so not sure what's going on here. Hold on a second. Try to start it again. Okay, I think it's moving along now, but the sound won't come out for a minute.
In this moment, I want you to just be aware. First, we can begin with just your bodily sensation, the awareness of the presence of this body. And the naturalness and simplicity of this awareness. It is just here. Neither doing nor undoing. The body can only be perceived because, first of all, awareness is here. And this awareness itself is what we are, actually. What we appear to be is the functioning of the body and mind and the sense of personality. This is also watched in the awareness. Whatever appears in the mind or body, or appears apparently external also to the body, all this is being perceived effortlessly in the awareness that is unmoving. You are naturally aware of this. But in this moment, it should be very clear for you. There isn't a functioning for awareness, but functioning of body and mind and all movements are taking place and are perceived in the awareness itself. You are here. You are not behind awareness or in front. You are the awareness itself. As pure awareness, you have no self-image. An image is only another phenomenon appearing in awareness and watched by your own self as awareness. Create no relationship to anything that appears or arises in you. Remain self-aware. The sense of coming and going is also a movement appearing in you, because your body, mind, thought, feelings, all these, they arise as movements in that unmoving awareness. Whatever appear, let it appear by itself. There is no need to follow or to analyze or interpret now. Let them come and go. Like this, nothing will trouble you. You are not that which comes and goes. No appearances can be you. They come and go. Appears, disappears. You are the witness of both the appearance and disappearance. But now, you are not concerned about these things. there is a presence, a silence, a stillness, which is here by itself. There is no doer of it, no creator of this stillness. It is simply here, in you, with you. It is the fragrance of your own self. There is nothing to do about this. It is naturally present, this fragrance of peace, of spaciousness. It is the fragrance of your own being. You have no form of your own. You are a formless void. And beyond void, because if there is a void, yourself perceives it. Your own self, the pure awareness, is not perceived by another. It is self-aware. You are the weakness of all. All names and forms, they appear in front of you. They report to your presence. You are the weakness of time. Time does not witness you. Your senses, mind, emotion, all this arises in you naturally. You are naturally aware of them. But none of them stay, all comes and goes. Even the attention is watched by you. When I say it is watched by you, it is not in some personal way. The person itself is only idea. Watching of the idea of person also appears in you. You are the unborn. There is no date of birth for you. There is no date of end for you. You are like unbound space. There is neither death nor life for you. You are immaculate awareness. There is neither high nor low for you, neither inside or outside. All these appear through the mind. Mind itself is only ideas appearing in your own self. Let all things arise, let them appear. Remain in your natural detachment. This is effortless for you. Remain without identity. Identity adds nothing to you of value, but limits your openness. You are the pure being. There is a silence now. This silence is also present with you, indivisible. It's a subtle current of pure joy. But there is no one behind it, no one to keep it or to lose it. Be aware of this. knowing this, you will not be troubled. Remain in your own natural spaciousness. When I say remain, it means simply remain in your natural self-awareness. There is no one to do this. You are already this. Do not create any relationship with any object, any appearance. Also, do not create any relationship with the idea of even subject. Let object and subject appear. Keep no labels for yourself. Remain as you are. You are the unborn, the undying, the timeless. You were never born. What is born is this form and the name that came into being. And this coming into being appears in your own timeless, infinite self. You are pure awareness, beyond names and forms, beyond what comes and goes. All these appearances, they are watched effortlessly in yourself. If you remain without identifying with what appears, then your own timelessness will become self-evident for you. You are the witness of all appearances, all phenomena. You are the eyes that sees all. But this all-seeing eyes, they cannot be seen, because it is itself formless. Ideas such as becoming yourself or knowing how to be, leave these ideas, and these ideas will leave you. They do not serve what you are. Do not tie yourself to any intention, nor to time. Don't anticipate to become something in the future. And your timeless, ever-present being will reveal itself more clearly. Remain like this.
Okay, if you're in a relaxed, focused state, you can stay in that state for as long as you want to. But we have come to the end of another episode of Health for Health and the Awakening of the Self. I do hope you enjoyed some of the program and learned something from it. I'm going to sign off now with a very beautiful song by Christine Allegra. What's her name again? Christine Aguilera, I believe is how you pronounce it. And so I'll be signing off, and I'll thank you for listening. Our next program will be next Monday from 6 to 8, Health and the Awakening of the Self. Carry on meditating if you're in that relaxed, focused state. We'll see you again another time. Bye for now.
somos novios, pues los dos sentimos mutuo amor profundo. Y con eso ya ganamos lo más grande de este mundo. Nos amamos, nos besamos, como novios nos deseamos, y hasta a veces, sin motivo, sin razón, nos enojamos.
Somos novios, mantenemos un cariño limpio y puro. Como todos, procuramos el momento más dulce de los besos, recordar de qué color son los cerezos, sin hacer más comentarios, somos novios.
Comentarios, somos novios.
Somos novios.
Siempre novios.